it from him. And as always, it's Phoebes the Titan, who's there he is, and your own host, Mr. Lip. What's going on, everybody? Today we're going to talk about, well, really what HHR is. If you've listened to our podcast in the past episodes, you've probably heard us reference that a lot. It's Helping Hands Recovery, and it's my initiative and organization that I'm trying to change the world of recovery with. And it's not alone when it comes to new ways to look at recovery. So with that being said, I also have a bunch of poems like usual, and I have songs for us, and we're gonna have a great show. But let's introduce David over here. How are you, David?
I'm doing well. How are you?
What's up? So, what's your view of recovery?
My view of recovery. I don't know. So, like, it's changed, like, over time. Like, initially, it was just like, oh my God, like, recovery is just like strictly like drugs, like stopping drugs, and like completely abstinence based. But you know, like, today, recovery for me is just like, I don't know, like essentially just trying to like be the best version of yourself and whatever that looks like for you.
That's exactly what HHR is. It's we're trying to eliminate the bureaucracy of recovery, which is in my opinion exactly what you just said, like, oh, either you stop doing drugs or you're not recovering. But there's so many other avenues. I like to say that recovery is as individualized as the addicts are they themselves. So there's Absolutely. So many different ways. You and I spoke on the phone briefly. You were talking about like harm reduction and stuff. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, like I'm a big fan of like harm reduction. You know, like initial, like my whole like journey in recovery started in 2016. You know, like, of course, like, went to jail, went to treatment. And initially, like, you know, like, I was introduced, you know, to the 12-step movement. And, you know, it's very, like, kind of, like, black and white. Like, either, you know, you stop or you don't.
Exactly. And I think it's kind of outdated, too.
It definitely is, because, I mean, like, that doesn't work for everyone, and people are still dying. So, like, clearly, like, that, I mean, like, yes, don't get me wrong, like, it is effective. People are recovering and doing well with that movement, so I don't want to put it down in that way. But like, you know, there needs to, we need to like broaden our horizon, you know, like, and be more like accepting and open to new ideas. And
absolutely.
So, yeah,
I totally agree. Who better to come up with ways to stop using drugs than addicts themselves?
Right.
We've got all of these senators who were talking about like all the opioid epidemic and everything, and they really only know anything about it from like a statistical point of view. They Right. don't really know exactly the damage that it's done other than what they're told. And it's just, it's not, I don't know, their ideas are not.
Can I jump in on that point?
Absolutely.
Because it rings so true, I feel like when you said, who knows better the solution to addiction than addicts, like, spot on, right? I had a friend, Glenn Martin, who did a bunch of work in prison reform, and he used to say, those closest to the problem are closest to the solution. Like, he built a whole organization that was empowering formerly incarcerated people to be the activists who were getting in the door to talk to the bureaucrats about what needed to happen, because he was sick of people who'd never really experienced things firsthand being the ones coming up with the solutions. And I was one of those people for a long time. I like kind of moved through the world, went to college, got my master's, was like working in reform, but I had like no idea what, for example, some idea I had that added bureaucracy would do to the person on the other side. Like, had no idea, you know, and there's that disconnect. So I really respect how HHR is, from the ground up, you know, for us, by us, like, you know, exactly. Like the FUBU, like FUBU ethic holds, like for us, by us, you know what I mean? Like, actually, like, that's so critical in any sort of work, I think. And not to say you don't need allies and accomplices and people to work inside with you, but whose leadership gets centered, I think, is the question ultimately. And too often, people with the right letters after their name get centered instead of people with the real lived experience.
Exactly. So
just,
yeah.
Yeah. For years, we've been at the mercy of clinical professionals and people that have worked in the field a long time, and their sort of viewpoints dominate, you know, the policy. And, you know, we all sort of come into the mainstream of recovery, which is abstinence only. And, yeah, if you really work hard and you're like, there's like 1-3% of those people will be successful in being completely abstinent, and it's like, okay, what about the other 97%?
Right.
We can't say, oh, you know, well, they didn't want it enough, or they didn't work hard enough, or
right.
you know, they had some sort of failing that stopped them from being successful.
It's hard. Yeah. Total abstinence is extremely hard to obtain.
It is.
And
it's like, I don't know, like, and like going into recovery, like, you, I don't know, like for me, like, you have to like kind of like take a look at what do you really want for your life?
Exactly.
You know, like, and kind of like let go of what others want for you. Cause I mean, like, of course, like, people want the best for you, so they're gonna like try to like impose like how they want your life to be, but like, what do you want for your life? Like, you know, what does that look like for you? And it takes like, you know, like some time for you to actually sit back and be like, hey, like, do I actually want to completely stop? And like, what does that look like for me? Or do I want to like be like an occasional drinker? Or do I want to like, you know, smoke weed on the weekends? Or like, you know, like, there are so many different things. And I know for me, I got tired, first of all, like many relapses, and just completely, you know, like feeling like a failure because like, hey, I'm not staying sober, and realizing, coming to like realize, like, you know, like, I want to do harm reduction. Like, this is what I'm okay with, and that's what I do, and I'm happy. And, you know, like, you know, for myself, like I'm on medication assisted treatment. I do like, what is it? Very sparingly will like use like weed for anxiety, and like, I don't know, like, I'm happy and I'm fine with it, and I'm doing fine.
If you're able to actually, exactly, if you're able to actually lead a successful life doing what you're doing, who should have any right to tell you that that's not right?
Like, or recovery.
Exactly.
Yeah, like,
it is recovery.
Like, who are you? Right.
If you're doing better than you were when you first started, then I think you're on the right path, and I think that should be more acceptable to people.
And if you're happy, yeah.
Exactly. Happiness and success, like, it's your life and it's your recovery, and you should be able to, within certain parameters at least, lead it the way that you want to.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, we're going to come back in a few minutes, and we'll talk more about all of that. We're going to play Lawless Lawrence's pick first this week. It's called My Own Prison by Creed. We'll be back to recover together.
Quarters in session, a verdict is in. No appeal on the docket today, just my home. In. The walls cold and pale, the cage made of steel. Screams fill the room, alone I drop and kneel. Silence now the sound, my breath the only motion around. Demons cluttering around, my face showing no emotion. Shackled by my sentence, expecting no return. Here there is no penance, my skin begins to burn. So I held my head up high, hiding weight that burns inside. Don't infuse their self-pride.
feel the pain that was given on a sad day of loss. A lion roars in the darkness, only he holds a key. A light to free me from my burden and grant me life eternally. Should have been there on a Sunday morning.
Welcome back, everybody. That was Recover Together with Lovely Lawrence's pick, My Own Prison by Creed. Today we're kind of destructuralizing our show. We're just going to talk today because we want to let everybody know who we are and what we do. And Helping Hands Recovery is right now just an organization, but I'm currently pursuing my bachelor's degree in psychology, and I want to become a certified recovery peer advocate like Mr. Lawrence over here and get all of these credentials behind me to make it seem like I am a person who would be able to actually run a rehabilitation facility. And when I go to the investors and ask for $1 million, they don't laugh at me because I really do care about this, and I care about everybody who's involved in it. I care about everybody who's not involved in it. But there's so much more to recovery than just not doing drugs. There's the mental health aspect of it, like dual diagnosis. And then there's the whole LGBTQ community who really don't fit in at the norm, at the modern view of a recovery facility, and I want to change that. I want people to be able to feel accepted and know that they're going to be receiving care that's specifically directed towards helping them as individuals. And there's so much that I want to do, but I need to get as much help myself to begin with, because it's just not something that I could do alone, you know? Lawrence over here is definitely a big help in my life, and Phoebe's too. Even just doing these shows with Phoebe's, it helps me see my path better.
Yeah, you're talking about the LGBTQ. Recently somebody hit us up on Instagram and said that they wanted to maybe run a meeting here that had a focus, because there's like a gap in the community. You know, it's something that's really needed.
Absolutely. That would be great. We should definitely look into that, because I mean, there's a whole demographic of people who aren't receiving like adequate treatment or adequate help. So what do we just forget about them? Like leave them, let them be the outliers? I don't think that that's the solution that we need. No. Recover together is exactly that. It's recovering together. We need to include everybody. Because when you look at it, it's really not just a problem that affects only addicts. It's everybody can use a little bit of recovery in their life, you know?
Literally.
Do you have any experience on that topic?
On what? Sorry, on like...
LGBTQ and barriers to recovery and, you know, staying engaged in your own recovery.
You know what? Like, yes, I am. So I am gay. So I definitely have, you know, experience in that as far as, so like, I mean, I could get very specific, you know, like in the gay community, like crystal meth is like a huge, huge thing. And, there isn't necessarily like a MAT or like, I don't know, like, I feel like providers really don't understand how to treat people, you know, that are LGBTQ and, you know, that deal with recovery from like crystal meth, because it's like a whole nother like monster. And I know like every drug like has its specific things, but you know, like that specifically is something that, you know, I feel like a lot of providers just don't really have adequate training. And then like whenever you try to like educate them and be like, hey, like, so like this doesn't work, isn't, you know, like what you're using for like, you know, somebody who has, you know, like an opioid addiction, or, you know, any of the other substances, or, you know, like it doesn't work because like there's specific things, like anxiety is one thing, you know, like, that I've struggled with, that's like crazy, you know. People that, you know, I mean, like, it just,
Hey, here, take a Benadryl. Or
right.
Yeah. Take this allergy medication.
Right. But like, and that doesn't work. So here's the thing, like, people that, you know, like, come off of, like, crystal meth. Well, first of all, we know that crystal meth dumps the most amount of dopamine in your brain out of all the drugs. And so, like, coming off of it, there's, like, that huge gap. And it creates, like, a...
anhedonia.
Right. There.
Anhedonia. Right. You guys getting all fancy now. Right.
No, I don't know. So you, like, get the anxieties, like, out of this world. So, like, I know, like, I'd be, like... my anxiety is crazy, and they'd be like, oh, no, like, here's, you know, like you said, Benadryl, and I'm just like, no, I'm sorry, but I'm going to need something stronger than that. And it's, like, really hard. They, like, look at you. I went through, it's, like, really, like, discouraging going to a psychiatrist and being like, no, I'm just going to give you the standard cocktail that I give all the other people at the halfway house, and you'll do just fine. And it's just like, no, actually, I'm not, and you're actually doing more damage that way. So yeah, there are definitely barriers, and it's more, like you said, like there's this thing like called, like person-centered care, you know, like, and like you said, treatment for everyone is like individualized.
Exactly.
And so like, you can't just like, I don't know, like everybody, you really have to like, kind of like listen to the patient. And some people that have, you know, maybe struggled and or started the recovery process and they've been in it for a while, they kind of like have, you know, some degree of awareness. And so like literally when, you know, you're talking to a provider, like they should listen when they say like, hey, like this isn't going to work for me, like maybe give it a try, you know. Yeah. like be open-minded, and be like, hey, all right, so I'm going to try it your way. We tried it my way.
So exactly. How do you feel about, replacement therapy with crystal meth when it comes to like drugs such like Adderall or Focalin or anything? I know a couple people who are in the same treatment program as me who see a doctor, and they're prescribing them pretty much replacement therapy, only with like Adderall or Vyvanse is a big one.
Right.
So do you have any experience with replacement therapy and that sort of idea or an opinion on treatment?
I am all for it. Like, I'm totally all for it. All of my doctors said no. So, like, I didn't even get a chance for that. So, for me, it wasn't even an option, which is unfortunate because that certainly would have helped, you know, even if it's, like, a step-down kind of type thing.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I'm, like, really happy to hear that because I've read online in other places, you know, that they do that. So that's, like, really cool to hear that, you know, some doctors and providers are doing that. I actually had to, like, trick a provider to kind of, like, giving me what I needed. It's because I like knew what was going to work for me. And so like, and I mean, I did get what I want and, and it's been helpful. But yeah, that's really great. I really think that's awesome. I think like, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm on Focalin personally. I'm not, my most recent relapse was on crystal meth. And it definitely, as you said, is a whole different monster. It's something that once you start doing, you see the world through those eyes. You don't want to go back to seeing it through any other eyes. But Focalin definitely helps me not want to use meth at all. So, but that's not why it was prescribed to me. Like you said, I had to show them that I was experiencing ADD symptoms and everything in order to get it.
Right.
I'm also on Suboxone, which is a miracle in my opinion. It works for some people, it doesn't work for others. Some people abuse it or sell it, but there's so many things that can help,
right?
But modern society just doesn't see it as an acceptable form of treatment.
Right.
Yeah, this is something that nobody's talking about, that, you know, the focus has been on opiates and overdose for like several years now.
Yeah.
But we're in the midst of two different epidemics right now. It's opiates and meth.
Oh
right?
My God. Exactly. Since I've come home from prison, I haven't even met any more like just heroin addicts. Like,
right.
Meth is extremely prevalent in our region right now. And it's to the point where I couldn't tell you where to get weed from, but I could tell you where to go and get some meth if I was asked. You know, it's right. Bad, and more and more people are doing it, and more people are starting to make it now. It's crazy.
Right.
Phoebes, you've been quiet again today. How what's up with crystal meth in your area? Because just for all of our listeners' sake, you're come to our show from Pennsylvania.
Yeah. To be straight with you, I can't tell you the breakdowns, but I know it's got to be following similar patterns. And just like David said, like here's Lawrence, but like the news is like just like behind. It's like everyone's just getting the memo about the opioid crisis, and meanwhile, the next one is like right here, ready for intervention. And how, what is it going to take, 5 years for the first PSA to come out? So again, that's why it's so important for people like with direct lived experience who know other people struggling, who know what's going on, need to be the ones empowered to come up with the next solution, you know?
Right.
So anyway, I'm not sure exactly what it looks like down here in terms of numbers or anything like that, but, you know, it can feel like we're in our own little bubbles where we are, but I think these patterns are true all over the country.
Yeah. Well, this whole thing, it goes to show that our future in general is very fragile. And if we don't get the help we need, everything could fall apart. And if we don't believe in ourselves, everything could fall apart. Tell your puppy I said hi, Phoebes.
yeah, got you.
That brings me to my first poem. I believe I've read it on here before, but it's called exactly that, A Fragile Future. And I think it's very powerful, so I'm going to read that. A Fragile Future. Smoke rises in a gray cloud, my shoulders slumped, my head is down. The wind howls softly, a vicious sound, a breath caught costly, triumphant bound. Diseased we squirm like gums receding, a lesson learned through wounds still bleeding. Humanity scorned, a demon's breathing, like babies born through hateful breeding. But light still shines through shards of glass, he's barely broken, she's breaking fast. Like a house of cards not meant to last, a fragile future follows presents past. And that's that poem right there is just like one big metaphor. It's about using meth, obviously, but how if we don't work with what we got right now, the future that we are working towards could just fall like a house of cards, because it's not stable. it's hard to talk about. It's hard to come up with the words that I want to describe all of this with, because it really is a situation that really hits home, and it's something I struggle with every day, that being in recovery and mental health. And I just had a mini breakdown before the show. Lawrence showed up to pick me up from my house, and I said to him, I feel like I'm just one step away from ruining everything every day. And this week it's actually been worse than it has been in the past. And I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do about it, but I know that I have people who care that could help me. We're going to turn this over now to Lawrence so he could talk to Mr. David about different views of recovery and everything. And we're going to take a break first, and then when we come back, we'll get right into that. This is Lost by NF featuring Hobson. Enjoy.
Look, self-awareness, pride's a coat, and yes, I like to wear it. Buttoned up, don't like to let no air in, with a pair of gloves that I hope doesn't perish. I discovered though when I get holes in them, and I let joy in, I'm in higher spirits. My mistakes are like a screaming parrot, just repeating lyrics. I can barely bear it when I'm lost. Road is narrow, I'm looking down it like a gun's barrel. Aren't we all searching for the serum that could help us breathe and leave our state of peril? All of us have made defensive scarecrows that we scatter around our fields and treat like heroes when they scare away the things that we should cherish, cause we're too embarrassed to admit the fears that we're lost. Yeah, but what does it matter? I get too combative inside of me's a personal canvas. The paint can be flat, I get messy when I start to get rattled. The heart of a savage, I'm quiet when I lurk in the shadow. But something don't add up, I don't wanna be overdramatic, but look at the data, it's obvious that humans are fragile. We tend to get mad at the ones that call us out, but the fact is we need someone that'll be honest when we fly that handle. I admit I throw a fit when I begin to unravel. Keep my wits been off the grid, but now I'm back in the saddle. My intent is not to rant, I like to own what I value. I can take you on the fence and maybe pick up the paddle. I like the world against the current, that's the way that I travel. Opposite of what the grain has got the brain of a rebel. Take initiative, I'm diligent on every level. I never could settle, I like to keep my foot in the pedal. Yeah, I love the pack arenas and all, but what I really wanna do is learn to handle my thoughts and put the reins on them, show them I'm the one that's the boss. And pull them back when they get out of hand, I'm breaking their jaws. I'm taking the flaws, they told me I can never evolve. Then pull a bane on them, ask them, oh, you think you're in charge? You ought to know better, ain't no way around it. Applaud the traits that I want. They say I can't afford what it costs, but I manifested this. Failing's how you grow and learn your lessons, kids. Take the worst and try to make the best of it, cause when you fail, just know that it's a test in it. You can learn to pick yourself back up again and train your brain to not be such a pessimist. It's okay to make mistakes, just don't forget that there's a high road, but I skip the exit when I'm lost. Yeah. When I'm lost.
Wow, these burdens are heavy, and I'm hoping it don't bury me. I used to be joyful and skip so merrily, but now I'm too cautious and tiptoe carefully. My mind left, and it's nowhere to be found. Am I a big old parody? Cause it's no fair to me. And now I'm at the point where I'm spending a grand a week on hypnotherapy. Look, I'm trying to wash away my sins. I got a group of loved ones that ain't my friends. And if I ever take a nail, then they might grit. And they all want to see me stay in the cage I'm in. So when it come to anybody, there's no trust for no one. Man, so what? My whole plan's to go nuts. My shoulders ready for most drugs. I'm gon' judge anybody trying to enter my circle with no love. Hold up. My sanity's gone. I'd rather be torn from this planet they planted me on. Your stats a reward. I'm actually bored with having a sore heart. It's torn apart from a family that I don't have anymore. Man, hold up. I was living so oblivious with millions. It really was a pity, huh? A pity, huh? It's kind of funny what a penny does mixed in with a mini buzz.
I feel stuck.
Life got me by the neck with a blade against it. Cause I was running late for the train and missed it. The only thing I feel is pain and vengeance. So I'ma act out like a raging misfit. And every verse I lay gon' stay sadistic. You wanna hate me? Good, great, terrific. You'll never see the day when my anger's dismissed. You better go and change your wish list. Cause I, yeah, manifested this. Do not treat me like some adolescent kid. I am praying to the Lord with the book of James, hoping he go at my testament. This dark cloud, that's my residence. Demons knocking, I don't have to let them in. I done made mistakes day to day, you probably can't relate. I just ain't the same when I'm lost. Yeah. When I'm lost. When I'm lost. When I'm lost.
Welcome back to Recover Together with your host, as always, Lip. And right now it's about that time that Lawrence would be doing his list. But as I said, we're destructuralizing today. So Lawrence is going to do what he does, and that is run an awesome show. I'm going to turn it over to him now, and y'all hear from me a little bit later. All right, Lawrence, what do you got for us today?
What up, what up? This is Lawrence, Lawless Lawrence.
Lawless, lovely Lawrence.
So I was just thinking before how you guys were talking about different things, and I was reflecting back on my experience with abstinence and harm reduction. You know, I kind of grew up in AA, and that has been my pathway, and you know, I'm smart enough and had enough experience to know that just because it's my experience doesn't mean it's everybody's experience. And kind of in the beginning, you know, there was that, it was very rigid, and it was like, just don't drink, you know, put the plug in the jug. And I would hear that and I'd be like, but I can't stop fucking drinking. like, what do you mean just stop? It doesn't work that way. So there was a lot of things that I didn't like or I didn't understand. And, you know, there were people that were struggling a lot. And I was always advised, like, oh, stay away from that person. They're a chronic relapser. They'll get you high before you get them clean. Sure. And I just always thought that was BS. I mean, and that was the people, you know, as soon as I could stand on my own two feet and I felt secure in my own recovery, that was the people that I gravitated towards. And a lot of it was just being a support, like on the phone or meeting somebody at a meeting, you know. Or sometimes people would have outbursts and they would leave the meeting. You know, and then secondary to that, there were people that I got sober with and I saw them go on with their life. They didn't shoot heroin anymore, but they would drink or use marijuana or recreationally take LSD or mushrooms or something like that. And first in my head, all that indoctrination was kind of like, oh, well, that's going to lead you back to heroin or that's going to lead you back to drinking. And what I found was that there were people that didn't go back. And that kind of shattered everything for me because everything I sort of believed about abstinence went out the window once I saw it with my own eyes. And, you know, the advocacy movement brought the idea of harm reduction and, you know, safe injecting and Narcan and supporting people at whatever level that they're at. It may not be what somebody else wanted for them, but it was the best that they could do at that moment or what they wanted.
At least we're keeping them alive.
Facts.
Yeah, dead people can't enter recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's kind of my argument for, you know, when I meet people in the community that are like, don't you feel that you're enabling people? And then I'll just say that, well, like, dead people can't find recovery.
Right.
99% of the time, we'll just shut somebody up.
Yeah. Right?
That's
because it's a valid point.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think you're enabling anybody anyway. They're going to do it anyway. The only thing you're enabling them to do is to be safe.
Right, to live.
Exactly. You're enabling them to have another day.
Right.
I think we should have more things like that. I mean, the safe injection sites, there's a big argument going on in New York State about that right now. And it was turned down last year. I'm sure it's going to be brought up again at some point, but I mean, it's not the greatest thing in the world, but at least we know that that is a guaranteed way to lower the overdose rate.
Yeah.
Or at least the lethality of the overdose rate.
And there are dark sites, especially in New York City. There are places that you can go and inject safely, and there's volunteers there that make sure people don't overdose or that they have clean supplies or whatever. But, you know, it's time to bring it from the underground, you know.
To mainstream society. Like I said, I say this a lot. Our generation, because we're all relatively close in age, is the generation that's about to start running the world. We're finally coming of age. And our ideas are probably going to be listened to. So we need to figure out exactly what we're going to do and then start advocating for those, like this right here. It's if we advocate enough for safe injection, eventually it's going to become a reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've learned that apathy doesn't work. You know, we can't just sit around and say, well, this problem's too big and it's something that I can't solve and there's nothing I can do. So, you know, we need to be more active and vocal in saying, like, this is what we need, you know. It's not the solution, but it's a small part of a greater whole. You know, and we need to throw whatever resources we can at the problem to try to tackle it.
So, are there any other recovery initiatives that you know of?
Recovery initiatives by,
like, Helping Hands Recovery or harm reduction or anything.
There's an agency called Harm Reduction Works that I'm pretty familiar with.
I did a Zoom meeting with them recently.
Yeah. So, you know, a couple of years ago, I started getting involved with that. It was very small and mostly based out of, like, Massachusetts. You know, Albie and Jess, who started it out there, you know, we met with them and they told us how to do a meeting. And it's very inclusive. There's people that are on MAT. There's people that are still using. There's people that have maintained abstinence, and they all come together and
coexist.
Yeah. So that's a resource that's out there. So yeah, most of the meetings are online now, but there are some that are...
That's okay, though, but, I mean, that's something that might make more people open to it, because with being online, there's a certain amount of anonymity, so they could get the help that they need, or at least get advice without putting it out on Main Street. So, David, I am... You're big with harm reduction. What exactly are, like, the principles of this?
So for, like, I guess, like, so for harm reduction, I guess, is just, like, the lesser of whatever evil. So, yeah. you know, like, if you were, I guess I can give an example. If you're using, you know, like, a bag a day of heroin, it could be harm reduction of that could be anywhere from, like, maybe using a bag every other day or a bag a week, or, you know, like using Suboxone or Sublocade or using medical marijuana. Let me back up a little bit. It doesn't even have to be that. It could be I'm used to using the same needle over and over and over with no cotton. So now I'm going to use a clean needle and I'm going to use a cotton and I'm going to, that's harm reduction in itself. Okay. You know, like it's, there's a really broad like spectrum, and it really, it's very individualized. You know, it
depends on
really
that.
Right. It really is, and it depends on like what the person really wants. Like, if you still want to use, all right, that's fine. So like, let's try to like do it the safest way possible. That's harm reduction, okay. Or if you, you know, like along those lines.
Yeah, for me, it's like, what's your goals, and how can I help you achieve those goals?
Right.
Rather than when somebody enters some sort of outpatient or inpatient, and they say that you need to do A, B, and C, you know?
Right.
Phoebs?
Yeah, I mean, I think harm reduction in some ways, it's the practical aspects are so like important, but it also represents a huge cultural transition, because the whole war on drugs was basically the war on drug people addicted to drugs, right? Yeah. The war on people who are so impoverished they have no choice but to make a living in the drug market, right? So it was like very much a focus on like a bunch of panicked people thinking they had to like save their innocent children from the future drug war, who were not attached to the reality of that life, who were like, you know, wealthy, like politicians' wives, what, whoever was kind of drumming all of that fear up. And harm reduction basically re-centers the conversation on the harm being with the people doing drugs and their loved ones, right? Like, re-centers the person who has to deal with the health implications of addiction, right, instead of the supposed potential victim of the drug, you know, person addicted to drugs. So it's so powerful, and that it undoes this whole narrative that like society is victimized by the person addicted to drugs versus the person addicted to drugs is actually victimized by their addiction when it goes untreated and stigmatized and criminalized by society. So it's a huge shift, and I think it also opens up the door to decriminalization in a really profound way, which at the end of the day is like, we're not going to get anywhere until we stop creating such tremendously harmful impacts for being caught with the wrong thing, right?
Yeah,
I mean, you know, having your whole life being, you know, just being arrested is an intrinsically violent experience, right? You're losing your liberty, you're losing your freedom. Like, being incarcerated is intrinsically violent. And then add on top of it all the bullshit that happens in those settings.
Right.
And how, so that you're further traumatizing people. And that's supposed to help them deal with right, a trauma-fueled, you know, like, health crisis. How,
and
exactly?
While they're in prison, they're learning how to get better at what they were doing anyway and not get caught next time.
Right.
It's not...
And, like, I get that sometimes. And I think one of the things that I have a hard time is when I hear people say, like, oh, you know, jail or prison saved my life. And because what I realize in that moment is, like, that's true for them. That was the timeout, the checkout, the place of forced sobriety. But why on earth can society not create that sort of situation, a timeout, a checkout, you know, a space that is, you know, supporting recovery that is not jail or prison?
Right.
You know, like, the, can you replicate the positive without all of those incredibly negative? And we talk about LGBTQ people, talk about like a quadruple whammy of also trying to survive jail or prison when you're gay or when you're transgender, especially. It's really dangerous. So these are all the things harm reduction opens the door to.
That really just hit me with a little bit of inspiration there, replicating the positives without replicating the negatives as well. That's something we could actually work on,
right,
creating a place where they get to have a timeout, like
right,
you said,
without the trauma,
like, right, without feeling like your liberties are like not accessible to you at all.
Because we have so many people that are going to jail for crimes that literally were only committed in the pursuit of
drugs,
being able to take care of their addiction.
Right.
Exactly, absolutely. Like me, I only did what I did that sent me to prison, robbery, which wasn't a real robbery, but anyway, that's for another day. But I only did it because I needed money to support my habit. And there's so many people like that. Or there's people who are selling drugs to support their habit, and they get caught with a sale, and they're doing 2 to 4 years in prison. Like, it's just not... There's got to be another way.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that criminal justice reform and the harm reduction movement have sort of been, you know, on the same timeline recently, because it's a multi-pronged approach. You know, we have to look at impoverished people that are being incarcerated and having more, having a better situation. You know, that's where the bail reform came about, having MAT in jails and prisons.
They started doing methadone treatment in prison, actually while I was there in Marcy Correctional. They allow people who were on methadone in the street. It's pretty much people just from New York City right now because they have to have the program in their jail as well. But people who come in to the system recipients of a methadone treatment program, they continue to receive their dose, and they keep prescribing it to them. And I think that's something that would be even more beneficial if they were using Suboxone, say. So if you go into your county jail while you're already on a program, they continue your dose, and
it could
definitely help people take more advantage of the programs they have in prison, because there is so much. They do genuinely present themselves as if they want to rehabilitate people, to give them the source, everything they need to be able to help themselves, but it's not applicable because these people are not, they're trying to cop little tiny pieces of Suboxone just so they don't have to deal with how they're feeling. And it could change a lot, you know?
Yeah, can you imagine if they did to people what they do to us? Like, can you imagine if you were diabetic and you went into jail and they're like, yeah,
you're
diabetic, but, you know, we're not going to give you insulin.
Right, and you'll be fine. That's so fierce how they do that. I can't.
Mm-hmm. They're both defined as chronic relapse diseases.
That's so crazy.
And yet, and in terms of putting harm reduction's effectiveness into perspective, because I think in this country there might be people who are a little hesitant about, like, oh, are you enabling people? Or, you know, and so Portugal decriminalized all drug use about 10, maybe 15 years ago now. It was in 2001, actually, 20 years ago now. So we've had two decades of research. And basically, if you get, you know, if you have, there's still some criminal stuff attached to the distribution of drugs. But if you're caught with possession, there is no criminal impact. You actually might be brought, if there's trouble involved in it, then you might be brought to a board that has like a social worker on it. Like, they have a multi, you know, they have a panel of people who will come help you come up with a treatment plan. Mm. And so what they've seen in Portugal over the last 20 years, so in 1999, Portugal, right, considered like the size of a state in this country,
yeah,
had 369 overdose deaths in 99. They had 30 in 2016.
Wow. Okay.
New HIV diagnoses because of injection went from 907 in 2000 to 18 in 2017. And the number of people arrested and incarcerated for drug offenses dropped from 3,863 down to like 1,000. So it's, and I know that it's also, they've seen reductions in overdose rates. So it's just, anybody who's interested in how harm reduction works in practice, go Google Portugal drug decriminalization, drug reform. And there's tons of statistics and case studies that have been done. It's a proven model. Harm reduction has shown to be effective and to have the outcomes that everybody, I think, is looking for. So, you know, it's not as radical as it sounds, actually. It's been working for 20 years in other places.
All righty, Phoebes, you hold on to any other jewels you've got for just a few minutes. We're going to take our final music break, and then when we come back, you could paint as much of a picture as you can. I don't want to call it the bigger picture this time because, like I said, destructuralization, but you always have information just like what you just did, and I would love if you wanted to share some when we get back. All right, everybody, this is Last Letter by Whit Lowry, and it is an extremely important song to me. And Phoebes, if you haven't heard it, I would definitely recommend listening, because It's a deep song. Alrighty, guys, we'll be right back.
This might be the hardest song I've ever had to write. Yeah, I dreamt about you last night. I only see you when I close my eyes tight. Yeah, I wish I told you how I felt before you left, but it just never felt right. Yeah. I wish I told you everything before you left. I won't forget the day that they found the growth in your chest. The cancer took a hold of your body and then it spread. I talk to you more now than I ever did, I'm a mess. This song will never capture the pain that I could express. I learned from you that nothing is perfect, but try your best. I know you had your demons a younger me didn't get. And out of all our demons, our biggest might be regret. Relate more than ever, remember back when I would only see you every other week. And every other Wednesday, you would take us out to eat. Mommy, you had split, so we're living in between. Looking up the word divorce to understand what it could mean, but I don't understand. Mom is with another man. You've been drinking heavier than me. Was just another can. Caught you full of broken homes. We were just another fam. Could've left like other dads. You had another plan. So you stuck around. That's a life that you probably would never choose. You bottled it inside and that bottle turned into booze. The anger took a hold and your body took the abuse. But finally found sobriety. Cried when I got the news. I know. Been hurting more than I show. Inspired by your story. Couple things you should know. I met this girl at my show. Teared up by what I was told. She said I'm sober because of you. You do way more than you know.
And I said, oh, grant me the serenity to accept everything I cannot change. You always told me that do anything to have you back, see you one day. I wonder if you see me when I fall, yeah. I wonder if you hear me now at all. Maybe if the world played this through speakers, I'll be loud enough to reach you in your ear. My last
and I don't understand how you would stay so optimistic. You started chemo, fought the battle, never quit. That really left an imprint. And we would talk about our lives and after this how we would live them different. See, mommy, you would put your differences aside. Every day she would visit, see the love in your vision. See the hurt in your smile, your wisdom is what I'm missing the most. I'll never be ready to let you go. I never felt so helpless, it's out of both of control. You told me how you wanted to travel, next thing you'll go. And your body had become fragile, not once did you lose your soul, we were told. It was progressing and you had less than a week. True love is every tear when we told you we had to leave. And how we were conversing, not once did we need to speak. That one day in late October, you passed away in your sleep. I've been crying when I think about it. I miss your smile, I miss your laugh, and now I live without it. I told you music was my passion and you never doubted. And people tell me they relate, but now I truly doubt it. Remember crying on your grave and yelling up to you, how did I lose my way? I won't forget that summer was some of my darkest days. Was asking for a sign, sat in my tears and prayed. When I saw the sign you sent me that day was forever changed. I know I should have been a better me. Well, blame me when we argue, I said things I didn't mean. Me and you are who I issue, should have always been between. So I'm sorry for the lack of communication from me. I just wish that you were here so you could watch me with a Grammy. But more importantly, to build a family. I hope I make you proud and become everything I can be. I hope they play it loud and send this letter where I can't reach this silly mark.
Please grant me the serenity to accept everything I cannot change. You always told me that do anything to have you back, see you one day.
Welcome back to Recover Together. We are in our last few minutes. We're going to have Phoebs hit us with some knowledge over there, and then we're going to say goodbye because I would like to go eat something. Alrighty, Phoebs.
Nah, I mean, there's been a wealth of knowledge already shared, so, you know, I think it's just about what harm reduction is and the shift and, you know, again, like when we talk, like I said earlier, when we think about harm reduction, it's a culture shift. It's a culture shift to recognize who's actually really suffering with addiction, and then centering our ideas and our resources and our tax dollars and our social workers and whatever we have at our disposal toward their specific needs. And, you know, as Lip said earlier, if that's the direction we're going to go, that means you have to be empowering the people who've experienced addiction firsthand to talk about what the solutions are that the community needs. And a lot of times the response in this country, especially to somebody being an addict, is like, oh, well, you know, you need to be taken care of. You know, what could you possibly know about how to help yourself or how to help other people, right? And that's the outside perspective. The reality on the ground is that people who are addicted are saving each other's lives and helping each other out and coming through for each other every day, right? The culture of, you know, to see people with addiction through just a culture of lack of care and harm invisibilizes actually that harm reduction was born and out of the people who were experiencing firsthand those struggles. So when I think about the big picture and what's important here, you know, is just to remember, you know, that every year, you know, over 50,000 Americans are dying from opioid overdoses, right? More than the combined death tolls of the Vietnam, Afghanistan, and Iraq wars combined, right? Every year. And places that have chosen, I was talking earlier before the song break about Portugal as an example of a country that's gone a completely different route than the punishment and criminalization route and said, we're not going to say that it's illegal to put anything in your body. It's your body. But we are going to try to take all the money we were spending to incarcerate and arrest you and put it into completely different services. We're going to put it into having community health boards that if you get, you know, you're having a hard time, there's somebody you can check in with, they can direct you towards treatment. Put it into treatment. Put it into clean needle exchanges, putting it into Narcan, putting it into medicated assisted treatment. So all we can afford harm reduction. I mean, when every, if you look at the budget, if you look at the budget of any county, any town, any state in this country, the biggest line item is going to be for your jail and your police.
Absolutely.
And so I guess what I'd say is at the end of the day, whatever your politics are around Black Lives Matter and defund the police and all these buzzwords, just take a good hard minute and ask yourself. The $100,000 a year it costs about to have one police officer hired and on board and trained and everything, what could you do for that $100,000? How many social workers, how many safe needle ejection sites, how many certified peer recovery advocates could you have for that one position? This is not a target on police. It's a target on asking ourselves who in the society is empowered to actually make a difference and save people's lives. And so I think at the end of the day, we have to be harm reduction without a simultaneous shift away from criminalization as the first response to addiction is gonna flounder because it won't have the money it needs and it'll just still be competing against the system that's broken. So I just want to make a plug for us to be bold and to look at the research and to look at what's happened in places that have decriminalized addiction and drug use and recognize that everybody in society can be made better off by that approach.
Absolutely.
And it is truly the only pathway to reducing the harms that we see because everything else seems to be making things worse as far as I can tell. So that's all I got today for the picture, but you get it, right?
I absolutely get it. And I'm just going to say thank you. I really do. You have no idea how much I appreciate you, Lawrence and David. Thank you for coming on the show. I hope you come on more often. I'm going to end the show with a poem called Hurt. And after that, I'm just going to
eat something delicious.
Hopefully let everybody know that if you're ever feeling alone, you're not, and let them know that they can always reach out if they feel that they need to. But yes, absolutely eat something delicious. Hurt. All his pain was plain to see. His world was broken, and so was he. Even bandaged, the damage still hurt. He was alone, his home was dark, he needed fire. She was the spark. He squirmed from the burn because it hurt. Time does go by, but my dear, even memories can bring fear. And the pain, oh, the pain, how it hurts. Dreams shatter, as a matter of fact, and once they're gone, they don't come back. Living a lie, you realize that it hurts. Alrighty, everybody, that was Hurt, and that was the final poem of the day. You guys could always reach out to me. My name is Philip Schmidt, and on Facebook, it's Phil Schmidt. You could look me up, message me. I'm willing to help anybody who asks for it. You're not alone, and if you stand with me, we'll recover together. Have a great night. Bye.